This is Candace Ellis with Davis Stevenson on July 8th, 2011 at the Panama Canal Reunion in Orlando, talking about life in Panama. So I guess we'll just start right from the beginning. How did you find yourself, or how did your family come to the canal zone?
Well, actually, I was born in the Republic of Panama, one of the rarities. My father was the editor of the Panama American, which was a newspaper published in Panama. On one side was English, and then you turn on the other side was Spanish. And I was born on Calle Estudiante on July 9th, 1930. Then my father's coming to the canal was rather opaque. My dad was one, he was a newspaper man, so he was all over the place. And but then we moved into the canal zone for a couple of years and he worked for the Panama Canal Company, and we lived on Ancon Boulevard. Then the family left. We went to Downers Grove, Illinois. Then we went to Puerto Rico, Haiti, and San Domingo. And 3 days after Pearl Harbor was bombed, we left on the last SS Cristobal, the Panama Canal Railroad boat for Panama. Mm-hmm. And we came back into Panama, and we stayed there ever since. And I joined the Army in 1951. And went off, retired as a full colonel. But I remember as a little boy riding a train across the isthmus and looking out Gatun Lake and all the stumps that were still up for the trees that were flooded. Mm-hmm. And I was always amazed by it. And today when I go back, I kind of brings back memories to see this. Most of them are gone. I went to Balboa High School. I graduated from Balboa High School. Mm-hmm. I was a mediocre student.
How did your father meet your mother? Was she in the zone?
No, my father met mom in Puerto Rico, and they were married in a town called Caguas, mm-hmm. Puerto Rico. My mother graduated from college, wanted a degree in physics. But in those days, women couldn't get that kind of degree, so the only thing she got a degree was in astronomy. And she was a school teacher in Puerto Rico, and that's where they met. And then my dad from Puerto Rico came to Panama.
Kind of moved around. I know you mentioned, so you lived in the zone, and then you left briefly and came back.
Yeah. When we came back, we lived in Panama.
Okay.
And that was during the war.
So did you live in the zone during the war? Did you live?
No, we lived in Panama. Okay. And then later on, we moved to Corundu, mm-hmm. which was an Army town. My dad went to work for the Army in Corundu Heights.
Okay. But that first time that you guys were there, your father was working for the canal?
No, he worked for the, he was the editor of the Panama American, the Panama newspaper.
Yeah, I'm just trying to...
And mm-hmm. then he went to work for the canal company for 4 or 5 years.
Right. what kind of work did he do for them while he was...
You know, I can't remember, but I remember the story that a family lost their job mm-hmm. because of the economic problems. A lady and... My dad resigned so she could take his job. We went back to the States and down the road, then to Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. He got a job in Puerto Rico. But if you ask me, as I say, my father's background is rather opaque. Sometimes I thought he was a reformed alcoholic or something.
What was it living like in Panama for the first time? Did you guys have the Panama Canal housing? You know.
No. We lived right in Panama City.
Okay, so even when he was working for the canal,
We moved in and lived on Ancon Boulevard for a couple of years.
Right.
And I can remember sitting on our back porch and seeing the iguanas going up and down the oil palms. It looked. I can shut my eyes and see it today, and this maybe 6-7 years old then.
Mm-hmm. Was it a? Do you remember if it was a single family home or was it?
No, it was a four family of the old French construction.
The big, right?
Yeah. On Ancon Boulevard.
Mm-hmm. And then, where did you attend, like middle school and elementary school?
We were traveling so much. My mother taught me. I went to Calvert School, which was an extension school many years ago for students overseas, mm-hmm. and I ended up back in the canal zone. I did not speak good English because we were in Latin America. I'm totally bilingual, mm-hmm. but my English was terrible. When we came back to the canal zone, because of my language problem, I had trouble at school. Mm-hmm. So they put me back in a sixth grade in Ancon with a teacher by the name of Sue Kaur, who is a very famous writer. And she was my mentor. And in sixth grade, I went to junior high school in Balboa and Balboa High School.
Mm-hmm. What was Balboa High School like? Was that a fun experience?
Yeah. I look back. Well, at the time, I didn't think so because I didn't like school. But I look back at it, and I think, you know, I bet we make lifelong friends there that we still today. In fact, I was out here and I bumped into a guy I graduated with back in 50.
Mm-hmm. Do you say that the quality of education, you think?
Excellent. I mean, excellent. The schools were...
Even though you didn't like it.
Very, very good schools. Mm-hmm. There was a great focus on education. Mm-hmm. And I can remember we used to have flag football. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. they're going to be tackle football. All of us were so excited that now we're going to play tackle football.
Oh.
You know, with little things. Mm-hmm. Like we didn't have TV for many, many years. And they had black and white. We all used to sit around. And then the Army came in with the color TV. So... it was quite an experience.
Yeah, so describe an average Saturday night for a high schooler living in the area.
Drinking beer at El Rancho.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we were such a close, you know, I was a Boy Scout, and we did a lot of scouting. And we hung around, we used to have clubhouses. Every town had a clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And like at Ancon Clubhouse, there was a great big field to the right of the clubhouse, they faced it where we used to play Ring Olivio and kick the can and things like that. We all sit around there. We played a lot of sports. They encouraged a lot of sports. And the Canal Company made it was a utopian experience in a communist setting because the government controlled everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just great fun.
Mm-hmm. The government brought clothes in?
No. Mm-hmm. The government gave us jobs. They controlled the housing. Where you could, and your housing was based on your grades. So if you were high up, you were high up in the pecking order.
Right. I think somebody mentioned that just shopping was difficult within the zone, you know, doing shopping for clothes and stuff like that a lot of it was...
We had the commissary. The commissary was built.
Right.
And there guidelines within the commissary are pretty limited,
mm-hmm.
and they had a closing stage and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And your choices weren't great because you had no other competition.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grew up, Canal Zone people very seldom went to Panama. In fact, I think my father-in-law, who was a tugboat captain, did not go to Panama in all the years he was there until I married his daughter, and then they started going into Panama. They wouldn't even go to the movies in Panama because the Panama Canal, so we had our own bakery, we had our own dairy, we had our own ice cream plant. So everything was taken care of.
Right.
They went on annual vacation to go to Cristobal and go on the ship to New York or New Orleans. They didn't. So there was quite a gulf there. That's why a lot of Canal Zone kids never spoke Spanish.
So you think there people just weren't interested in going to Panama, or were there other reasons?
I don't think so. I think what the reason was that everything was contained there. Mm-hmm. And they had no reason to go. Now, a lot of Americans had places up at the beaches at Gorgona, Santa Clara, and on weekends they'd go up there mm-hmm. to the beaches, and we'd go fishing up in the mountains of Panama. But I think the reason that the interface, number one, was transportation. You know, when we were growing up, horses were just starting to disappear. And there was the Panama Canal Company took care of everything. We had our own movie halls, we had our own schools, we had our own clubhouses, our own police force, our own post office. So why go to Panama? Have everything here. And the community is very close, you know, like if you lived in Cardenas, everybody in Cardenas would mm-hmm. get together and parties.
Yeah, and you mentioned transportation. How would you have gotten into Panama if...
There was a bus, they used to have chivas, what they call chivas. If you go down to the museum, you see models of them. Were truck bodies where they built a back to it, and everybody sat in benches facing each other, and they're called chivas.
Chivas, okay.
And we used to go to Panama in chivas.
Mm-hmm. And then to travel between the Atlantic and Pacific side, there was a railroad.
The railroad, and then during the war, they built the road, but remember, mm-hmm. those days, cars were still very luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think till about late 48, 49 is when we really started crossing the isthmus on the road, but there was early morning train, a 10 o'clock train, a noon train, an afternoon train, an evening train, and a 10 o'clock train. So there was regular shuttle service.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the ball games. There was a tunnel. I always waited for the tunnel to last about 30 seconds. You try to sneak in a kiss with a girl there.
Oh, really? Was the train a place to socialize?
Yeah, oh yeah, we'd go to the football games and basketball games, and all of us kids would get on the train and have a good time going across the isthmus. And
how long did that journey take?
About an hour and 15 minutes, and it stopped at Peter McGill, Gamboa, Frijoles, Gatun. So it stopped, and they had kerosene lamps inside the train. We were, as I say, everything was taken care of. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I guess we can move on to just different traditions like Christmas and New Year's and celebrations like that. How were they celebrated?
Normally Christmas, the company would bring the Christmas trees, and they had one day where everybody rushed out and get in line. All the Christmas trees were out in a big lot, and you run and grab yours. And the big thing after Christmas, we used to collect the Christmas trees, and we had what they call a Christmas tree burn, where all the Christmas, different parts of town collected, and in town we'd have a Christmas tree burn. Mm-hmm. And it was a big battle between towns. Guys would sneak in here, try to steal this guy's Christmas trees. And some of the Zonians still practice it here in the States. Like in Tallahassee, they have a big Christmas tree burn. Mm-hmm. Where after Christmas, all the Christmas trees were brought in, and we would have a barbecue and
be fun.
Oh, it was a lot of fun.
Was it common for kids to have a part-time job?
No, part-time job, the most of part-time job were like ushers at the movie hall. Mm-hmm. And during the summer, the company had a student program. But jobs like you find in the States, no Burger Kings or anything like that. It was just a lot of us would sell sodas at the ball game to make extra money, or try to sell mangoes on the street, but there were no jobs because, remember, the government controlled everything.
Right.
There was no private industry in the canal zone, per se.
Mm-hmm. And how long was your family in the canal zone? When did you guys leave for the last time?
My father passed, when we came back in 41, my father passed away in 63.
Okay.
My mother passed away, she's almost 100 years, so I can't remember now. I joined the Army in 1951 and left. Was commissioned, spent a year with an airborne regiment. Then I was assigned to Panama, where I met my wife, June, whose great-grandmother, her grandmother, was a telephone operator at Gatun in 1914 when the canal opened. So her roots go way back.
So she's been there for a while.
Yeah, her
she had been there.
Yeah.
And you went back to Panama with the military?
Yeah.
What kind of work were you doing there? Just stationed there?
I was a lieutenant in the United States Army. I was a platoon leader in the 33rd Infantry Regiment. From there, I was very fortunate to be assigned to a diplomatic post, which led to a great military career. I was the first lieutenant, and I was assigned to the Paraguay Army mission for 2.5 years, which led to other assignments due to my total bilinguality and the fact that I carried a Panamanian passport.
Was leaving Panama the several times you did, was that ever difficult for you? Because I know it is a very tight-knit community.
I don't think so, because I've become accustomed to moving as a child.
Right.
And moving was always a new adventure. We and my wife retired from the Panama Canal Company, and we left in 89. I wanted to stay, but she wanted to leave. She was scared of Noriega. But I was still a full colonel in the Army, and from talks to some of my senior officers, I knew the invasion was coming, but I had no details. And I tried to tell June, be patient, they're going to get rid of Noriega. But she decided she retired, and we came back to the States.
And that was in 1989?
89. Both our children were born in Gorgas Hospital.
Okay.
My son was born in Gorgas, my daughter was born in Gorgas. My son was born in Gorgas. I was overseas in the Army.
Oh. When did he get to come back? How old was he?
Well, June brought him back to me. He was about 2 months old when you came.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was in Paraguay.
Were you there for the riots in 1960?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I participated in them.
Really?
Yeah, we went out to dinner, and my wife and I and our two children, as we walked out of the Tivoli Hotel, I saw all the trouble. So I took June home, and I came back. And I witnessed it till about 1 a.m. And I took my car, instead of trying to get back across, I went all the way around the forest preserve, went and told June, pack stuff. We're going to move back in a zone with my parents, or her parents. So I drove all the way back around that night. We stayed in, I think, about a week. Then we went back to Panama and June said, and then we went back and lived with her parents for another 2 or 3 weeks till things calmed down.
Mm-hmm. And what was the tension like then? Was it pretty bitter between...
Well, you know, in fact, I wrote my paper with Command General Staff College on the riots when I was in, to get my graduate from Command General Staff College. And I really think the resentment was always that we were there kind of... Remember, when we went into Panama, the ascendancy of power in the United States was colonialism. We had taken the Philippines, the Spanish-American War. So I think we went in there with that attitude, not intentionally, mm-hmm. but English was the dominant language. We had the silver and gold rolls. Did anybody discuss that with you?
Yes.
It's gold and silver rolls. And they paid the local rates in silver and the Americans in gold. So we were brought up under that attitude. And there was a lot of resentment from Panama because they had to come through the canals. On the canals, and police could arrest them when they were going between their country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I was a Panamanian, I would have felt the same way. Wait a minute, these guys right in the middle of my country.
Yeah.
And the politicians stirred it up. They stirred in it because it was, like here in the States, tax the rich. Well, in Panama, it's get rid of the zone, get rid of the Americans. And I think today, when I go back, people are beginning to, that attitude is starting to change. I'll give you an example of what happened. When the treaty was coming in, the military was leaving, and there was a guy that shined in the barracks. We had shoe shine boys. You take all your boots and drop them off. He'd shine them, clean your shoes. And we paid him every month. And the guy, there was a young man that polished shoes for 22 years in the barracks. Educated 3 children through college based on that thing. Hmm. The San Blas Indians who did the pot walloping, the cleaning up of the mess halls,
mm-hmm.
made a very good living because the military would hire them. We had no GI ever did kitchen work.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were sectors that the politicians stirred it up because it was to their benefit. A lot of Panamanians say, hey, wait a minute, don't touch it because, you know, I'm making a good living. And another big resentment was in the canals, and maybe they pay $2 an hour, and Panama minimum wage would be 50 cents. So there was room for resentment. I was a great proponent of not signing a treaty. In fact, I put together a petition in Congress. I did a lot of work. But now I look back, and I see what's happened. I think that it was a good thing we signed the treaty,
mm-hmm.
because if we were still in Panama, in the canal zone, everything would be painted gray. And there'd be no change because of the government. But when I go back to Panama, I see all the condominiums going up. I see all the improvements. And what the commission has done with the product we turned to them, I'm impressed. And I have no resentment about that now.
Would you have said, during those riots, would it have been dangerous for Americans in the zone to be traveling into Panama City?
They wouldn't have traveled because the army sealed off the borders.
Okay.
They couldn't.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Americans came over into the canal zone or just stayed home. And it was, I'll give an example. I was standing on a street corner about 3 weeks after the riot, and a Panamanian came up and said something to me in Spanish, gringo huevón, which was a real insult. And I said, Panamanian mal criado. I said, Panamanian without any manners. And the guy I thought was going to fall off the curb because he'd never expected to come back in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years, there was a slight tension, but it was a real low.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where did you relocate when you guys left?
Well, my daughter married a boy from Georgia. So we came back to, we had a place in Florida, and my daughter called. We were talking to her on the phone before we left. She says, Dad, you know, you were gone a lot, you know, and we were gone. Why don't you come up here so we can be close as a family? And that's where we are now.
Mm-hmm. And that adjustment, just because you were so used to moving, wasn't difficult for you?
Like I tell people, things like that don't bother me. You know, my outlook on life, hey, I'm sitting here talking to you this morning. Today is my day. Mm-hmm. If I come back here tomorrow morning, it's going to be my day. So I don't look at life in a way a lot of people, well, if I do that, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I look forward to every day as an adventure. I do. I really do. I'm looking forward to talking to you. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll leave here, probably have no great impact upon the world, but I had a good time talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great attitude to have. I'm trying to think if we've left anything out. You know, we're really here just trying to get a grasp on how things work there and what the experience was like. And one of the things I think we're kind of interested in is just race relations in the zone.
Now, mm-hmm. Let me say this. Mm-hmm. The Panama Canal was built mostly by Southerners. Mm-hmm. You know, they came out of the South, so naturally they had that bias. But when I look back on it, I don't think there was a tension. Hmm. Now, very true that the Black community, the West Indian community, lived in their own towns and they worked side by side and had different pay scales. But I've heard guys bring, well, you had the silver fountains and the gold fountains. I think that growing up, we didn't really realize that there was any, because I don't think there was. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember the waiter at the Akron Clubhouse when I was growing up by the name of Johnny. I'd come in the clubhouse and he'd say, how you doing? He'd sit down and he'd serve me a shrimp salad because that's all I could afford to get. And Jackman, who was a Black man who did our, when we went to the gym, he took care of our baskets. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the racial tensions like we had in the South, I don't think existed.
Right, because that's what I'm thinking of, you know, and the civil rights movement and everything that led up to it. And there's all these stateside politics that, you know, how are they playing out in the zone, which is really just,
Mm-hmm. There were some guys who were racists, but I think they were racist just because that was the thing to do. I've got friends of mine who are still upset about Jews, and they say, oh, the Jews, this, and I ask them, why? Mm-hmm. Well, because maybe his father was, or it was the mode to be. The racial tension, I don't think existed. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
That's interesting. Just trying to, you know, get to the bottom of that because that's how it certainly seems.
It only seems by people up here in the United States, mm-hmm. who try to build into it something that did not exist because politically it suits their needs. Mm-hmm. Now, there was tension between Panamanians and Americans, but again, that goes back to the fact that we're in their country, mm-hmm. that many kids from Panama were in the Canal Zone schools. Their parents paid the tuition for them to be educated and went to the States and got educations and came back. Mm-hmm. And I think when they start talking about the racial problem in Panama, I think it's a small group trying to build something out that did not exist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now you got to remember that when the canal was built, they first tried Spaniards, it didn't work out. The French failed. They brought in Chinese, they failed. Finally, they decided to go to Barbados and bring the West Indians in. And they could stand the weather and the work. Very true that they were aside, but that wasn't because of any overt thing. It's, again, at that time, the United States Army was segregated, the government was segregated, so it was a spillover from the United States.
Right.
But because there was no politics involved, there was none of the tension.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. That's interesting. You've really covered everything. Is there anything you'd like to add? Any particular memory that stands out?
Oh, you know, as a kid, mm-hmm. you know, we were at breakfast with another friend of mine who's Doran Thomas. We were talking about when we were Boy Scouts going to the Volcan. I said, Doran, remember when the trucks would come down with the fogging machines for the bugs? We used to run behind the trucks. Mm-hmm. Today, the environments would have a fit with that.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Or sitting on our back porch and seeing a deer walk through the backyard from Ancon Hill or a Nikki, mm-hmm. or trees full of parakeets. And it was a unique, I was very fortunate to grow up in a unique situation which very few citizens ever get to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how many times I stand on a lock wall, watch that ship go through, and I'm thrilled every time. I mean, to be able to sit there and say I'm a part of history, not very many people can say that.
Mm-hmm. How often do you get to go back there?
I go back 2 or 3 times a year. I like to fish.
Wow.
But
that's
we have
great.
A travel agency that we started as a hobby. we're getting ready now to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the opening of the canal. Mm-hmm. We're putting a program together for that. In fact, we're going to talk to the university and see if they'd be interested, because we do a lot of cultural trips for the University of Chicago and other universities.
Mm-hmm. But, you should take some UF students.
Pardon?
You should take some UF students to Panama.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the military, mm-hmm. the United States Army was in Panama way before the U.S. military used to cross the isthmus on their way to California. Mm-hmm. I saw a morning report, a report where they started with X number of troops and they crossed the isthmus and then lost in yellow fever, and that's when they were waiting for the ship to come down from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Commanded by Captain Ulysses S. Grant, and he crossed the canal. And the railroad was built to transfer the gold across. So when you look at Panama, my God, how intertwined it is
right.
with our history. We've ignored it.
I agree, and I think that, you know, this is why we're down here doing this kind of work and really hoping that some good research is going to come out of this, because it really is such an incredible source of, you know, all these experiences and different dynamics that set it apart from the States and just made it its very own interesting place. Do you guys have a house down there, or do you just stay?
Well, we own property. We sold it.
Okay.
I owned a farm
That's
down
neat.
There in our A lot of canals. In fact, for many, many years, guys from the canals would own the automobile distributorships. I think the first Bobo brewery was set up by an American family. The first whiskey distillery down there was set up by an American family. So there was a lot of interaction, because remember, in the canal zone, there was no private business.
Mm-hmm.
So you wanted to drink beer, who's going to supply the beer? Because the company didn't. So the manufacturing panel brought it over.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with you wanted to drink bourbon. Hey, can't buy, you know, I can't fabricate it, so a company was, they set it up, the same thing with, you want to buy an automobile, they didn't sell it, so you had to go to Panama.
Is owning land there expensive now, or is it?
Real estate values are going out through the roof because
okay.
of the boom down there.
Yeah.
But the cost of living normally is low. Mm-hmm. Food's rather, for us it's inexpensive. I mean, for a Panamanian, it might be expensive, but with the dollar economy.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that Panama is a dollar economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only country in Latin America to drink the water right from the faucet, because of the American influence with the filtration plants in the canal zone. The electricity is 110 volts, it's not 220, mm-hmm. because of the Panama Canal. So the influence is spread in both directions.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know if you had anything else, maybe.
Well, let me go back to this racial thing, because I was at a board meeting where this was brought up by somebody, and he was very snooty about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's somebody trying to create something that did not exist because of a liberal bias or political bias in the United States. And because a lot of us talk very fondly of the blacks, the West Indians. They weren't mm-hmm. blacks, so they were West Indians, I don't think. The word nigger was ever used on there. It was West Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's grossly overplayed, trying to make a issue. You asked me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you ask me?
It's just for a researcher. I'm actually studying the American South.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, race relations is like a marquee term within that. And, you know, you're assuming this is an American presence in Panama. And, you know, just, I guess, you know, just out of curiosity, how does that play out when stateside, you know, you have the civil rights movement, all the violence before it, you know, everything that followed it. So just because, you know, it is so closely associated with, you know, the mainland, you have to kind of wonder, you know, what the state of it was, I guess, really is what I'm trying to get down to. Because I know, you know, it was much different than from what was happening elsewhere. But with that said, what was happening, you know, what was going on? And it's really just that. I don't think any of us are trying to.
Well, I realize that.
Yeah, just curiosity, really, because it is such a new thing. You know, there's I've done the research, and I've tried to find, you know, publications and stuff on this, and it really is a new thing, so.
Well, let me in that relationship, if you want to take a look, look how many canals on people, married Panamanian women.
Right, and that's another thing that we come across all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously is very
different.
And not
lowercase, a lot of high class, you know, middle class Panamanians, they didn't marry the trash. Mm-hmm. You know, like people say, well, they're well-educated Panamanian women.
Yeah.
Go out and look around, mm-hmm. all the wives. Mm-hmm. Now, the big blow in the canal zone, speaking of that, is when they integrated the police force, and for a long time, mm-hmm. West Indians and Panamanians couldn't get U.S. rate as policemen and firemen, but that was done away with, so they were integrated into the canal. And there was some mumbling about that, but they didn't last long.
Right. When did the integration happen?
You'd have to ask an ex-canal zone cop.
Yeah, it's just interesting because it's so different, and yet it is still an extension of the U.S., so...
Well, the extension was because of the Southerners that built the canal.
Right.
And nothing else. Their influence was great. Most of the carpenters, steel workers, all the people came out of the South, mm-hmm. and they're deep roots into the South. Well, I hope I've given you a good mental enema.
You really
morning.
Have, because I'm really trying to grapple and understand this question as a historian of the South and figuring that out. And I think, you know, the more of these I do, mm-hmm. the better understanding I have of the conditions down there and what it was like, and it's really great. I feel like if I could speak Spanish, I'd be writing my dissertation about this, mm-hmm. but it's...
Well, if you want to do some side research, mm-hmm. take a look at the population of the canals and how many of us joined the Army and served in the military. Mm-hmm. See how many were Boy Scouts and became Eagle Scouts. How many of them went and got college educations? Mm-hmm. And we're way out of proportion to anything in the United States. Mm-hmm. If you look at, say, an average town of 5,000 people mm-hmm. in the United States, see how many got a college degree, advanced degrees, how many joined the Army. It would be a nice research for a project because it was outstanding. Most of the Canal Zone kids went off to college. The majority of us went off to college. A lot of joined the Army and spent time in the Army. Most of us were Boy Scouts.
Well, how high up in the ranks did you go for the Boy
In the military?
Scouts?
In the Boy Scouts?
Yeah.
I was a Star Scout. I was uh-huh. on my way to being I was a senior patrol leader. But, you know... But, uh-huh.
And was there opportunities for higher education within the zone or in the area?
We had the Canal Zone College, junior college for a long time. Uh-huh. Then Florida State came in and the University of Louisiana came in. You could take courses there.
They established satellite branches.
Yeah, the Pama Canal Company had an apprentice program, which was equivalent to 4 years of college. When you graduated from there, after 4 years in their apprentice program, you were a well-trained, well-educated technician, electrician, plumbers, mm-hmm. Iron workers, pipe fitters, mm-hmm. and most of them migrated into the Pama Canal. If you ever go down the Pama Canal and you go in the control house and get down below and look at the work where the different colored cables come down that they installed back in 1914, mm-hmm. they come at perfect right angles down, perfect right angles, and it's the Pama Canal had a fantastic apprentice program. And a lot of Canal Zone boys, you know, took it and stayed there as electricians and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, young lady, and I hope that we contribute to it, and I hope we...
I think you really did clear a lot of interesting things up for me, and that was great. Thank you.
And I hope we dispel this... racial thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was existent.
Yeah. That's good to know. You know, it's just coming from the what I'm studying, you are always like, you know, looking out for that and tense to that. But, you know, I understand that it was just in the North, it was completely different, you know, the way that it played out there. And then, you know, we have this, and it is relatively unresearched. And the publications on the Panama Canal have really been earlier things about the building of the canal mm-hmm. and not this vibrant, you know, social aspect. So I can't wait to see what people are going to do with this.
What other town mm-hmm. or company in the world could have 3,000 people show up every year to party. It makes yeah. Have you been out there in the lobby in the evening?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that it is. And everybody, I'll be talking to somebody and mention someone who I've interviewed maybe last year, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely every... It seems like it would have been really neat. The first time I did it, I came down here. I had done, Dr. Ortiz had given me a few readings to do and little things about it, but I still had no idea. And I started doing the interviews and I thought, I'm so jealous. Why?
Why are we so lucky and you're not?
I mean, that's just being bratty, but it sounds really.
Well, I'm glad I could help you, young lady.